This is Melissa, and today is the 26th of May, 2024. I hope everyone is doing well. The redux that I've chosen to go up is the talk that Alan Watt had with Jackie Petru. This was part of the series that became the Ancient Religions, Ancient History set of audios, and then got turned into the transcript book form, Waiting for the Miracle. And neither the transcript nor the audio is available on the website, so I encourage you to listen carefully to this because it's a really great conversation. I received a little note from Prince this week, and he mentioned this talk, which is in the second part of the series, and it's interview number 5. And right away, as soon as Prince started giving me the highlight clips, I remembered, oh yes, because this is the one where Alan talks about the shell that we are in, and how do we get out of that shell. And I always loved that illustration. I have referred to it a couple of times, but I hadn't been back to listen to this audio in a long time. I'm not going to say much more now, but at the end of the talk, I want to say listen carefully, because as I said, it's not on the website. The sound quality is not great. As you will hear Jackie say, this was actually a private conversation that she and Alan were having before something that was to be recorded. So it was never intended for radio. And she gave a profanity warning because Alan does use some profanity in this conversation. And she warned her listeners, and I warn you. The conversation that they have, this part 5, it is cut off. And so rather than trying to splice together audio and whatnot, when I come back on at the end and speak, I'll just read you a little bit that will complete that when they spoke again as part 6. So like I say, listen carefully and enjoy. Thank you.
Alan and I talked earlier today because I was trying out to see if we could tape record the calls. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but I think we're finding a way that we're going to be able to do this a whole lot less expensive. And while we were doing that, we got into our conversations as we normally do. And so many times I've said, Alan, we've just done another program. And as we were talking tonight, I put the tape in and started recording. And what you're going to hear tonight is Alan's and my conversation before the program. And you will excuse a couple of words of profanity, I guess we call it, because this wasn't really done for radio. But I just thought that what we talked about, we talk about so many things. And as I've said before, it's always hard to remember what we talk about on and what we talk about off. So I'm going to do a tape for you. So this is Alan from Canada, continuing actually a month-long conversation that we've been having. So here we go.
Theoristic fashion, because we're talking about the masters of war. You're talking about the masters of strategy, of archiving. They are the masters of education. They create the language which imprisons you. Many anthropology books will tell you the language itself must be limited in order to control a society.
Yes. Question, though, my darling.
But don't do it in the regular movement.
Well, then, what would a way be, Alan? Because, you know, when you think about this, their whole hold over us, I mean, besides religion, besides the lies there, their hold over us is money. And everybody's going broke because of the taxes.
And if they create gold and shove it out there, they're just going to change it.
Then what is? Do you have any thoughts?
How do you change the people? The people must change for the individual. This is a fight of socialism or communism or society against the individual. This is exactly where it is. Only the socialism
change people, but people have to stop buying into the system. Now, what do they do?
You can only change, first of all, by recognizing that everything is a front. You know, everything you see is a front. Plato told you in so many words that everything in his day was a front. He was a front. They hired professional orators to open buildings and open the games in Greece and Rome. That's all these people could do. And they were sons and daughters of orators. They didn't even have to know what they were speaking about. They had teams of writers working for each person who was a front, including Plato. And it's no different from today. The heroes before are nothing but fronts. Your news anchor man sits and reads a dummy board that rotates on a screen in front of him. It's all written by 25 people behind that one person, you see. It's the same with every author you get. You put a book out there. It's written by a panel of people.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and here's how is what you and I are doing, how is it going to change enough people?
Because you're bringing home a reality to people which they've never had a chance to glimpse before. The individual must change to change anything. A movement is always created, always has been a movement. That's how they used to call themselves cattle drivers. Driving is a very important word with them. They drive. And you drive things by creation, creating motion and conflict. You see? And we've always done it. In all of the Middle East, where all the kings and princes were related to the pharaoh. The same all over Europe. It was the people who were getting driven by cattle. And they always create the conflict, and they always give you the heroes. They have already planned the outcome because it's a massive chessboard. And they're giving us the methods to do it. We follow their methods and we're always lose. And we're controlled through what we think is news, media, and massive entertainment. And we don't get it that everything you see is a control mechanism. When even linguists, professional linguists and anthropologists, tell you that they have deliberately and have always and must always limit the vocabulary and the amount of language a person is able to use, because they cannot have individuals thinking off in directions which are not under control. Society then could not exist. And that's the expert's opinion. We are born in a prison.
Born into a lie, all right, but, and I don't mean to keep saying but.
Now, whenever somebody comes up with the same old bullshit, which is, if we just do the same old routine, and the same, right, you have to give you a new carrot, just bring out the same old carrots, shut up the front of you, and away you go. That's what they've always done.
All right, so you say we have to change people in order for it to be changed?
They do it by themselves. That's the only way.
So when people stop paying into the system, they go to prison. They lose their homes. Erwin Schiff, he's got everybody doing these zero tax returns.
And a whole bunch of others, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Nothing is happening right now, but like I said, I have this feeling that in a year or so they're going to hit everybody, and because people have signed their names, to those 10 fines. All right, so waking up people, and let's say for the sake of this, that a whole bunch of people are awake. What is going to get people out of this system? What is going to break down the monetary system?
I wouldn't even think about it. These things will automatically start breaking themselves when people are awake. You're still inside a shell trying to break out from the inside. But everything that you touch, see, smell, and hear is inside. Inside a prison. 22 minutes of comedy. And they showed you the team that would get laid off with cutbacks just for this one 20-minute show per week. There was over 150 people behind them. Now, meanwhile, everybody's saying, well, I like so-and-so, and so-and-so, they are fantastic. You see? They don't realize the organization of everything that we get in 5-10-minute sequences, the amount of experts, each in their own field, that goes on behind the scene. And that goes with a Bill Clinton, or anybody else, or the Pope for that matter.
How many people do you think need to wake up for the thing to start breaking down, Alan?
Not too many. Because there's not too many at the very top who control it. They're so inbred to keep it that way. They are the top of the tree, they are the pillar. And there's very few of them. But whenever there's the avenue of escape, it's always theirs. It's always been that way. They spent 1,000 years, about 200 BC to almost 1,000 AD, preparing the whole of the Middle Ages, preparing it. Literally bringing in people and who were nations at one point from the Middle East, settling them in, indoctrinating them into a completely different identity, until about 300 years later they have no clue of their origin. It's always been that way because this is not the first stage. And what always works with man, you see, and psychology will tell you this, will always work with man because man is taught from his infancy that he is inferior. We get books thrown at us by what's called the great authors. We don't realize, hey, just like Plato said, there's a whole bunch of people in expert fields behind that author. He's the front man. It isn't any different today than it was then. It's no different at all today than it was then.
And it's almost impossible to speak. It is impossible to speak without using the language they've given us.
That's right.
Because that's our only language.
That's the language.
How do we break out of this?
Because in everyone's ability in their head, but let me say this first. The technique of control through language. Language consists of 5 senses, each one the brain can interpret. We dismiss the other one. We dismiss our own hearing. It's what you see. That's the big thing, and that's the biggest illusion of us. Then you have your hearing. And then you have your smell, taste, and so on. Those travel business cinemas back in the 30s, you know, you had people off wrappers that would get fragrances off. Now they have virtual reality, which literally can fill the brain. So we're almost within virtual reality with the psychological techniques. And the lies since childhood that we are inferior. And we're told we're inferior because you see the brother's names on a book you're given at school, and you're taught right away this is a special person. You can never really be like that. And you flip through it, and you say, my God, how can you write on so many subjects? You see, I could never do that. Well, of course, she never did it either. So they have a roving specialist, like they have roving actors who are now all in Hollywood, basically now, all over the world. And when they wanted something, they would get an expert on the Hittite civilization. The guy would know anything left or right of that. And they go through school without using their own senses, because when you go to high school, you get a geography teacher, you get a physics teacher, you get a biology teacher. You don't go to your biology teacher and say, give me the knowledge of the religions of the ancient Sumerians. He's only a specialist in one field, and you would take it for granted that everybody with a bow tie that's shoved in front of her face on TV who's got a latest book out on something. He's a front man, he's an orator. And that's the technique of belittling everybody. The biggest part of our brain is called the parietal lobe. It isn't used. Why isn't it used? Because they don't want you to use it. Because the power of everything, that they call is in there, will be shut off from using it by feelings of inadequacy since we're children. And the truth means that there are special people out there, really we above us, which we obey, see. Throughout musicians during the 60s, it took what Plato said it would take. It took a fashion industry coordinated with music industry. The hereditary children of musicians who wrote all music, these came on TV in the 60s in Britain and they lined all shows. They had half hour Top of the Pop specials when they first hit with the Beatles.
They
would have four groups on in 20 minutes. They wouldn't even have time to set up your equipment and that.
Pre-recorded, you mean?
No, they never did it. They never wrote a damn thing in their life.
The Beatles did their own music.
No, they used. They used, even when they did the New York thing, it was completely pre-taped. They called it a Swiss Echo. When they got back to Britain, it was admitted.
But they did it pre-recorded.
No, they had the song on it, but only with somebody else's backing. As most of these guys did in session guitarists, guys who are professional guitarists. We had two number one hits in Britain about the videos out there in the late 60s by a group called Marmalade. After they had the second hit out, they had a problem on the BBC. Not one of them could play the guitar. They couldn't play a note on it. They probably had simply bought session guitars and they came. These guys just added their voices. The technician in the studio does all the rest of the work and out comes the finished product. They stood on TV just like the Beatles, just like the Stones and everybody else before them and after them. All good front seat and jumped up and down. So everything is a front, and I knew that as a kid. I could see what you see, how come these big guys are playing electrical equipment and there's no cable going from the guitars into anything. There's no sound comes out of them otherwise. And yet the whole media created the image of the people. Every kid is following them as a hero. People are buying guitars and wondering, how can I play like that, but these guys can? Well, they couldn't. And it's the same with every damn thing. You look at you're brainwashed into believing the special, they're up there. Of course they're up there. They were picked out of lineups, most of them. I know some of the guys that did it. Alvin Stardust was he had three hits in the 70s. He was a club singer. The son of a club singer. The grandson of club singers. And he went to a lineup in a lineup. And he was 6 foot tall, exactly, dark haired. He weighed about 145, 150 pounds. And he went into an audition, not with guys, not in books, but guys with tweed suits on, and women with tweed suits on, in their late 40s. And he picked him out, and he showed him drawings that were done by artists, art panels. And they showed him what he was going to look like. They brought out the costume of one piece leather suit. He loved it. They showed him how to hold. He gave his microphone above almost to his mouth. And his hand up over his nose almost. A diamond bracelet on the right thing. The right wrist. And then he says, you'll sing this song. And then 2 months later, it'll be the song. And then that one. And then that's you. You're out. And that's what happened. And that's how it's always been. It's a complete delusion. But every kid out there are presented with these heroes and heroines, and they show you sex and everything else, be good or be bad, whatever the message happens to be for the heroine. And the kids think, oh, they're special people. They're special. I have nothing. They are special.
What about the Spice Girls?
Oh, come for God's sake. Do you really believe that? Do you really, really, do you see them? They've all had acting lessons and that's it. I had a woman in her 60s sing through studio. I've been in studios. 60s
Thousands of years.
crying and for the birthdays and so on. I mean, this is
the final part of the brain, did you say?
It goes from
Put up 50 cents a signature. He told Rev. Reverend Mitchell. If you can get your people out there, I'll pay 50 cents a signature. They went out there and did it.
Yeah.
That's my only point.
Yeah.
It happened at the 11th hour.
Listen, when you're doing that, do you realize that there've already got umpteen different other plans in effect?
Honey, that's not my point.
NAFTA has already been...
I know. The point isn't that we got him on the ballot. I was spinning my wheels like everybody else was, Alan. I'm talking about... What I was talking about is the fact that it happened.
It only happened.
By the way, it only happened in a few states.
Yeah.
Very few states.
And again,
Illinois was a big one.
Yeah. It's communication, because if you can't get it out, good a few, and it's going to be a scattered few. If you can't get it out, that's why they own communication. There's no way that they need a little hole in the shell that you're going to stretch out with your finger arm with.
Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going back to, you said the answer is within all of us.
Sure.
And we have a power in our mind that people don't realize and recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is...
Yeah, if they stop using it in the traditional methods that they put forth for you, how can you change a system which they created in the first...
What I hear from everybody is it's not realistic to believe this could happen. It's, you know, like my friend I told you. And she said, I believe in God. Yes, I believe that all things are possible, but it isn't realistic. And that's what I'm talking about, is not being realistic. Not saying, okay, I know what it looks like, and it's all futile, it's all hopeless. Go beyond what it looks like.
Well, you're going to go beyond what they have given you.
Well, what it looks like is what they've given us.
That's right.
And what I'm saying is that, okay, forget what your eyes are seeing, forget what your ears are hearing, and just know that there's a will, there's a will. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you're following me, but my whole question was, not like you know the answer to it, but when Ann asked today, how many of us do you think that it would take helping this way and believing this? But we don't have to have another bloody war. And we don't have to have a financial, for their chaos.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but I said maybe.
If people, as I say, everything that influences them on a daily basis, and there's not very many, there's only a few techniques that we all use them. And we do it voluntarily, generally. And if you're buying a magazine, buying a book, watching TV, listening to the music, watching video games, watching the damn sports, which is everywhere, and we're using all that, we're getting all of our time away voluntarily to be numbed down. You know, you watch TV, your alpha waves change to beta waves straight away, you're in a hypnotic state. It's been well tried and tested. They know it. In Britain, they have lines. Your picture on TV is made up of many horizontal lines. But the US, they used a small dotted technique over the whole screen. But as soon as those capital rays bombarded the screen, you write into a hypnotic trance. I saw a guy go into an epileptic fit once before this. He was not classed as an epileptic. He was just closer to that brain sequence as that very fast flashing, which you don't consciously know unless you're on a TV screen. All these things were well known from the very beginning. So we give our wills over willingly, thinking we're getting entertained and told news or whatever, and presented with all the people who make people feel completely inadequate.
Some people who don't even have a television. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
understand that they do a lot of reading now. I know they're...
The reading is a deeper... Because I'm actually, that's what I put into. Who I know are releasing all the outer layer.
Illusion. We're completely conned from the day we're born.
And through schooling, which is conned platforms, but it just go literally all the more. We don't recognize the homecomer. I don't meet the science teacher in the school who can tell me all about history, or the botanist who can tell me about astronomy, etc. It doesn't happen that way. That's why. So, but it doesn't happen in high schools, universities. Why the hell do we so willingly believe that it happens everywhere else? Once you leave school, professors that are going around lecturing on different subjects, completely different topics and different fields. Others doing the same damn thing.
All right, well, you know how we've talked and I said I don't want to, I mean, to me, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, Alan, and the truth isn't doom and gloom, but this gets depressing to me. And if it gets depressing to me, I mean, and I have a...
Well, I would not dare to offer the standard techniques, which will never work.
What do you mean?
Standard techniques, just get a group together, just to get enough signatures, and we can change it. That's never worked in the past, it'll never work again. I've already snuck another law coming in under a different name, under treaties or whatever, and you're snookered again. I mean, no, that's... because there's no use of diverting people by handing them the tools.
Well, how do you see in your mind?
It only happens within the brain of the person.
Within the mind.
Absolutely. The whole person, the complete person, the psyche, the it, it only happens when those bonds are broken.
Do you have any thought in your mind, okay, like, when enough people are awake, this could all be derailed or changed? Do you see, in your mind, do you think about how it could happen?
I couldn't even really explain it to you in normal language.
Well, explain it to me in yours.
No.
Maybe I'd understand.
The thing is, are you going tonight or what are you doing?
Yeah.
We're just going in circles here.
I know.
And you're just looking for that hole in the eggshell, which can only be made for you.
I'm not looking. I'm thinking of all the people that listen, Alan.
But listen must go through a process, and then it's up to them to either switch the TV back on, fall for the next All Secrets of the Unknown by so-and-so, or whatever. It's up to them once they understand the techniques and the processes. It's up to them what they want to do.
Didn't speak that much about his music career, and people would write from time to time and they'd want to hear more and they'd love it when he would share those stories, and sometimes they would email and Alan would say, this is a distraction, and the reason that I don't speak about it is because it is a distraction. But there was something else to that reticence, and I think that we just got a little bit of that in the conversation that he had with Jackie. He did mention there, if you were listening, he gave an Alvin Stardust story and a couple of other stories about people in the music industry and how stars were promoted. And he said, I knew these people, or I knew, you know, so he knew the story that he was telling. He knew about it. And also in this talk, what he's trying to tell Jackie is that we are born into an elaborate system of illusion. And that a big part of how this system works and is designed to work is to make you feel that you are nothing. You're not special. These people are special. Your musicians, your actors, your newscasters, your journalists, your news anchors, your politicians. These are special people. As Alan would sometimes say, they came from special wombs. So I think that that was part of the reason why he didn't go into any kind of great depth with his music career, because he understood how that business worked. That to skyrocket up to the top, you would have to be chosen for that rocketing in your career. And everything was done to create this illusion. So I don't think he wanted to feed into that. Because the illusion system that we're born into, it actually builds on itself, it feeds on itself. It's no great conspiracy, as he said to Jackie in that talk. Yes, there's only a few people at the top, and that's why if a few people thought about things differently, if they thought themselves into being individuals, this illusion could conceivably collapse. One of the other things that he mentioned here, or Jackie actually said, well, according to your timeline, we've got till about 2030. And there was something that I just wanted to quickly mention about that. Alan talks about the brain chip again in this segment. And yes, his studies, his research made him think that we were on a pretty tight timeline. And that was one of the reasons he said, hey, I don't want to talk about the music industry as a distraction. Right now, big things are at stake. I want to stay focused on that. Sometimes there is a sensation that can happen when we who put across information for you are not careful in the way that comes across, that it can cause a lot of fear in the listener. Okay, we've only got till 2030. They've got all this high tech warfare that they do on us, and mind control, and brain chip, and like I was saying earlier in something I put out, 5G and voice to skull, and all of these things can become quite frightening. What I'm saying is focus on Alan's solution is to break through the illusion and to really be able to think for yourself, not be overcome by fear. And my own experience is that when you get that far in the journey or the process, that fear that I had initially going into it, it just went away. It subsided. So please, I'm saying, don't, if you hear things like, well, it's all over by 2030, don't let that paralyze you. I don't want to contribute to distraction, but Alan's conversation with Jackie here got me thinking about some Hollywood stories. So I'm going to back up to interview 3 that they had. And Alan was talking to Jackie about entertainment and how sex was used. And they knew back to the Egyptian dances, the dances of the 7 veils, just how much skin they were going to expose. Alan is conveying to Jackie the system of illusion, the masters of illusion. They've had thousands of years to perfect the art of illusion. And he's telling her, what happens in entertainment. And he said, psychology has always been used to entertain the people who enter in. Tain, he said, comes from tin. It's the same word, really, tin, meaning a shell or to cover. And Jackie said, that's why they call it Tinseltown. And Alan said, Tinseltown is a facade. It's a Western facade. It's just a front, like everything else. And it looks real, but in reality, there's nothing behind the street. But it's what you see that seems real, because it all comes from amazement. The word amazement comes from Mizraim, which is the old name for Egypt. You went to be amazed in Egypt. And Jackie said, that's why in the New World Order, the entertainers and the athletes will be so highly paid. And she says, will be, but they are so highly paid. Alan said, oh yes, because acting is, like Plato said, and this is what we must understand, the people who moved into Hollywood, the Holy Wood, and there are no Hollies there, like the Holly Berry, by the way, it's literally the Hollywood, the Holy Wood, the magic wand. The people who moved in there were not poor refugees fleeing Europe. They were extremely wealthy people who came there from New York, and then six of them, of course, for the 6 points of their star, moved into San Francisco and Los Angeles, California. California, of course, is just a new caliph, which means a ruler from India. That's what they called them, caliph. That came up again, as you heard, Alan's comment about Rothschild, what, you know, they weren't just rag collectors who saved up their money and then became international bankers. And he mentioned Hollywoodism, and again, you know, this idea, you know, that they have presented themselves as Eastern Europeans who just made good. So again, this is in interview 3, which you did not hear. They continue on, and Alan is talking about the cattle and programming the cattle and so forth. And he said, in their movie, Hollywoodism, now Hollywoodism was a documentary. So he said, where they boasted quite openly that they created American culture, which is quite correct, they did. They said that people, when they went to see a movie on the big screen, saw figures which were larger than life, and once again, you're back into the giants. These giants impress the values onto the little people that watch. So nothing is new under the sun. The same techniques are in play, and unfortunately, entertainment is very addictive. Everybody loves a good movie. Then he goes on to explain how carefully crafted the movies are to leave you with certain impressions, something for the women, something for the men. And he talks about the use of sex, and that what you were seeing would have, you know, 10 years ago, and this again is somewhere between 1998 and 2000, you know, would have been called soft porn, and now they have the whole world watching soft porn, and it gets harder and harder all the time. Alan said the goal will be pure sex. I have no doubt whatsoever about that. And Jackie said, we wind up in an animal state. Alan said, more than just that. It's well known that sexual abuse, and every psychologist and psychiatrist knows this, that people who suffer from sexual abuse from a very early age have a retarded growth to the frontal lobes of the brain near the frontal cortex. On either side of the cortex, you have what you call the parietal lobes, and that's called the silent area. That silent area is the biggest part of your brain, but at the frontal lobes, there is a slowing down, a retardation of growth in people who are heavily involved in sexual abuse when they're children. Sexual abuse does not have to be physical, even. There is much more psychological sexual abuse thrown out there. We watch it every day. We call that entertainment. Alan goes on to say how this is deliberate. And if you try to put it down, if you try to stop it, they cry freedom of speech. We can't have censorship. And he says, yet in Hollywoodism, which was based on the Neil Gabler book, An Empire of Their Own, How the Jews Invented Hollywood, this is from 1989, they boast quite plainly and openly about creating the culture, quite openly. And they can't help it because they're very pompous and arrogant. So they talk a bit more of that, But after Alan spoke quite a bit about that book and about the documentary that was made by the CBC in Canada, he talks about the professional actors and how they're trained and how every motion, how every movement is practiced, and that comes up again in interview 5, which you just listened to. He said, "You'll see the children's programs today, they all have their sons and daughters starting off about 5 years old who are already trained." He's talking about intergenerational actors. They're already trained in the art of acting, which is the art of illusion. Before I get into the meat of what I picked up in interview 5, I just wanted to mention that in interview 4, Alan had a conversation with Jackie about Zionism, and the difference between Sion, S-C-I-O-N, and Zion, Z-I-O-N. And what he's explaining, because, again, when you start to notice the illusion that we live under, and if you look to Hollywood and film industry, and then you read a book such as How the Jews Invented Hollywood, and you go on the internet and you see everybody decrying what's happening in Palestine, and you see the protests on the campus, and you see the division between the liberals and the conservatives, and you wonder, is all of this funded by Soros? Is there, you know, something grassroots going on here? Is this real? And this has gone on for decades. Why now has it reached a fever pitch of anti-Semitism? And you ask questions. And Alan was saying, all groups are used. And in some detail, he talks about how the Jewish people have been used down through time. And he talks about even what are the Jewish people? Who are they? I'm simply pointing that out to say, Alan has told us about thinking and thinking for ourselves. And it's just a cautionary that there are paths of inquiry and question that you can go down that have been laid on for you. Because if they didn't want you talking in a negative fashion about Israel or Zionism, that would be shut down. You see? It is performing a useful function. That's why it exists. So if you go into that and start waving your fist, there may be a lot that you are missing, but you have definitely gone into an area and are behaving, usually with emotional prompts, in a way that has been put out there for you, laid on for you, so to speak. What Alan talked about in part 5, he talks about the only way to get out of this. Hey, Jackie keeps saying, well, how do we deprogram? How do we get past the mind control and the programming? And it goes, you know, it's kind of round and round with Alan. And I think hence the profanity. He's trying to maybe cut through a little bit of her circular thinking now and again. And he said, they've got to break out of it by themselves. It's the only way. And it reminded me of some Hollywood stories that I experienced. And so I thought I would share a couple of those with you. The first was when I was newly arrived in Tinseltown. And a friend had a friend. Well, I should back up and say I wasn't making enough money. I was just kind of barely surviving as a young person in Hollywood, trying to piece together a living and keep myself in my little apartment. And a friend told me that she had a friend who had a high-end furniture store, and it was mostly geared towards interior designers and decorators, but the public did come in, and he needed help. He needed help with inventory and then a little bit on the showroom floor, kind of helping out with sales. I said, well, okay. So I went and met the friend's friend, and he said, sure. And he proceeded to train me on what he needed me to do. And I would come in and work on the showroom floor. And if somebody happened to come in and they had a question about a piece of furniture or an accessory, then I, armed with what he told me that was or something about it, I would help the person. Well, one day, Arnold Schwarzenegger and his wife Maria came into the store, and there was really no one else in this little shop except for me and Arnold and his wife. And I just said, you know, help yourself, look around. If you have any questions, ask me. But the interesting thing that I observed about him was that he wanted a lot of attention, right? So it's he and his wife and me in the store, and he wanted my attention. And I think there was just something, he just noticed that I wasn't blown away that he was there. So he started to ask me some questions, a couple of questions about furniture. And I just got this sense that Maria thought, oh, there goes Arnold again, you know, try to flirt with a young woman. But she wandered off and went to look at something else. And so Arnold's saying, what's this? What's that? What's this? I'm not an actor. I can't do imitations. But anyway, at one point, he picked up what I knew was a very heavy wooden barrel, because I had actually moved it at one point. And he said, what is this? And I said, well, that is, it's an Afghan from Afghanistan wooden barrel that they use to, in part of the yogurt making process, and they can turn yogurt into butter with that. So at this point, to show off his muscles, he picked up the entire barrel, put it over his head so that his head was inside, and then he took this big sniff and he lifted the barrel up again. And he said, I can smell the yogurt, you know. So he just did these silly things for the 20 minutes or so that they were in the store, I guess, to try to keep my attention engaged. And then he and his wife left. So that's my Arnold Schwarzenegger story. Then eventually I represented writers, and so this is where the art of illusion comes in. I had a team of comedy writers, and I helped them get a job on an improv comedy show. And I went to visit them one day in their writer's room, and it was a huge room, but it was wall-to-wall, those notebooks, that the black notebooks that are like the spine is 3 and 4 inches, and they were just surrounded by these. And so they were explaining to me the writing process on the show, that this is improv, it's improvisation. So the public is told that this is just all, you know, the sketch comedians are just shooting from the hip. They just get up and whatever comes into their head, they say it, and that's what gets filmed. Well, that isn't true, because what happens is that the sketch writers, the comic writers, they sit around a table all day long, every day. They have an idea. They kind of give the skeletons of a show. They'll come up with maybe 20 possible skits that they can do. And then each one of those is mapped out. If the audience responds this way, the sketch performers go that way. If they respond that way, the sketch performers go this way. And these notebooks are full of detailed instructions as to, you know, if the audience does this, this is your response. And then I saw the filming of one of the shows, and I could see this in action. Before they filmed the show, they did a complete run through, I think maybe the night before, and it's that they're doing, you know, the audience does this, then they do that. And so what I'm describing is that the performers have mapped the show out so carefully, it is almost as if it is scripted, because they have dozens of pages of every possible thing, and they've run through the sketch in 10 different ways, and they've run through it over and over and over in those 10 different ways. So no matter what comes up with the audience, where on the night of filming, it all seems very, wow, this is just happening right in front of us. They're just making this stuff up. They're so incredible. They're so talented. And that's not what you're seeing. What you're seeing by the time it gets filmed is something that has been thought out to the tiniest detail. Nothing is left as a possible surprise. And then they film it. And this is the way that it is with a reality show. And don't forget, Donald Trump came from the world of real estate. Oh, I'm sorry, not real estate. He came from the world of reality television. Why is it, you've got to ask yourself, did we have a president of the United States in Ronald Reagan who was an actor? It's just a bizarre world. And then, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger goes on to become the governor of California. So we live under illusion, so much of it piled upon so much of it that we don't stop. We don't ask ourselves. I mean, these are obvious examples, but we don't ask ourselves, where did these people come from? Why were they chosen to get in front of us? What kind of background do they have? Why them and not somebody else? Another thought that crossed my mind after listening to this talk was the idea of writers in general and how a script is chosen and, you know, sold and then gets made. And you go to a movie and you see it was written by so-and-so or so-and-so and his partner so-and-so. But that's not exactly what happens. You know, most of the time, even with the so-called A-list writers who are, you know, at the so-called top of their game, generally what happens is that the studio buys the script and it is rewritten and rewritten and rewritten. Sometimes numerous writers come in on that. Sometimes it's actual producers from the studio or producers from a production company who are involved in the writing process, and they don't take a credit, but they're there and they're shaping it, and it just goes through endless drafts. So maybe by the time you've seen the movie, the writer who gets credit, there's very little left of the script that he sold. So what is Hollywood doing? They're just buying a name, and, you know, in the case of an A-list writer, or they're buying a concept, but that's about it. So I'm almost done with my Hollywood story for you impatience. At one point, you know, after I was doing that for a long time and I enjoyed a lot of it, I had an active, you know, I had a lot of energy, and I liked singing, and I'd always wanted to sing, but I was terrified, terrible stage fright. The idea that anybody, even like a friend or a boyfriend or whatever, would overhear me singing, that would just shut me down instantly. Oh, you weren't supposed to be listening to that. But at some point, and I decided that I wanted to overcome my fear of having people hear my voice, and I wanted to overcome my stage fright. So I just set out on this little journey, and it culminated with me singing, and I enjoyed it. It was fun. And then I, you know, put together a little band. Sometimes the players would change. I did a few shows, and this was just kind of like a hobby thing, you know. So I had a drummer and a keyboardist and an upright bass player, but I liked music from the 1930s, particularly, and obscure things. I would do a lot of research and dredge up things that, you know, hadn't been covered in 75 years, and that's kind of what I did. And I liked the history of it. Why did they write the song? Who were they? And, you know, that kind of thing. So I did that. And then after one, and mostly it's just my friends, I'm like, oh, hey, everybody come. I'm going to do this show. And I did that. And there was somebody who came who was a friend of a friend who had a radio show in L.A., and he said, well, that was really good. I want to get you down and do a show. So I thought that was really cool. So it's a late night show. So about midnight or 11 p.m., I go to the radio station, and then the drummer shows up with his kit and the upright bass and the keyboardist, and we all get there, and they tell us where we're going to go, and it's going to be live. We're going to do three songs, and it's going to be live. And I just thought this was so fun, scary, you know, the idea that who knows who's listening, but I'm actually going to sing live on the radio in L.A. And I did. We had fun. We sang the three songs, and then I went home and I went to bed. And the next morning I went to work. And I was sitting at my desk doing my work, and the receptionist paged through into my office, and she said, so-and-so is on the line for you. Well, I just have to tell you that so-and-so was one of, like, the half a dozen world-famous Hollywood film directors that everyone is going to know their name. And so-and-so would never call me. You know, I didn't have those super A-list writers, and that's that. But I sat there, you know, in a momentary state of shock and said, okay. I took the call, and before I could say anything, the director said to me, I'm not calling for one of your writers. And I said, okay. He said, I just didn't want you to be confused or start trying to sell me a writer. I said, okay, well, what is this? He said, I heard you on the radio last night. You did good. He said, I really liked your little band, and I particularly like that song. And he told me which one it was. And then he said that he was doing a film, and he thought that that song would be great in his film. And could I tell him about that? And I did. I told him who wrote the song, what year they wrote it, who recorded it. And I said, you know, I mean, I'm going to do a show next week if you want to come and hear it. You know, blah, blah, blah. This is where it's going to be. And he thanked me. I got off the phone. I was so stunned by it. I was just blown away, and I thought, oh, I can't believe that. He heard me on the radio. He said that he had to call the radio station to find out who I was and get my phone number, and, you know, so, but he had tracked me down, and I that blew me away. And I let it go in my head for a couple of days, I think really right up until I did the show that I invited him to that he didn't come to, that, wow, wouldn't that be really cool? You know, he's doing this, he wants to use that in his movie, and wow, I mean, I'd never even thought that I would be singing for some kind of career. That was just, you know, that never crossed my mind. It was something fun I did to prove to myself that I could do it. But I let myself go on this little trip of, wow, how cool would that be? Well, he did not come to my show, and I didn't hear anything else, and the movie came out. And when it came out, I just said to myself, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to see the movie. I really don't. But I allowed myself to go so far as to look up the movie and find out what music was in it. And yes, there was my song from the 1930s performed in the movie by a superstar. One of those stars that they make, that they pick, that they groom, that they tell them how to deport themselves, and they take them to the studio and they run their voice through the filters, just the way Alan was describing, you know. But it was one of their stars. That's not who I was. And later I thought about that conversation that I had with the director, and I translated his Hollywood speak into language that I understood. So I heard him say that I did a good job, and he really liked my singing, and the band was great. And he would come to my show, and maybe, and hear me. But what he really said in Hollywood speak is, I had to work awfully hard to find out who you were. I had to actually call the radio station and get your name and find out who you were. And then I had to call you and talk to you. And I don't really want to be bothered to talk to you. I just want to know who wrote the song, who first performed it, how can I find out about the song, because I'm going to take the song and give it to a big superstar and use it in my movie. That's really what he said. I just didn't get it at the time. By the time I heard Alan talking to Jackie Petru, when I listened to this, and I am actually the one who took all of those hours of interviews that he had with Jackie, and I typed them, I transcribed them, and turned them into the book, Waiting for the Miracle. So I had ample opportunity to listen to these interviews over and over, and by the time I got to him talking about Hollywood and the music industry and illusion and how illusion is created, I knew that concept inside and out. So this week, in fact today, as a matter of fact, someone sent me something which led to something else and led to something else, and I discovered a podcaster by the name of Jocko. I think his podcast might just be like, I don't know, Podcast with Jocko, I don't know. But he is he's an ex-Navy SEAL, and he has a podcast. And I was listening to a little bit concerning the area that I was interested in. He's got quite a large following. And as I kept just looking at what he put out, I stumbled on a podcast that he had in February of this year with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the title of that podcast was Work Hard and Be Useful. And I thought, what a joke that is. Work hard and be useful. Yes, can working hard and being useful gets you so far within this illusion system. It will get you so far and not further. Because who is actually going to be a star in the firmament of the shell that we live inside? This illusion shell, that's predetermined, that is planned and put out by somebody else. It just made me think, it's all part of the illusion, all part of the way stars are used. They're used until they drop dead. What did Arnold Schwarzenegger say 2 or 3 years ago around the pandemic? He said, screw your freedom. So all of these people listening to Jocko, who is, you know, war, 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 war is good. War is good, the country. We're doing this for our country. And, you know, everybody, so we're told by the numbers, just flocks to this. And I don't know if the comments that you see are real or not, but they're saying, oh, two of my heroes, Jocko and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So here this is from August of 2021. Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't mincing words when calling out anti-maskers. The Terminator star and former governor of California addressed Americans who are still, quote, in denial about the severity of the pandemic during an interview with CNN's Bianca Goldriga on Wednesday. There is a virus here. It kills people, and the only way we prevent it is get vaccinated, wear masks, do social distancing, washing your hands all the time, and not just to think about, well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No, screw your freedom, Schwarzenegger said. You have the freedom to wear no mask, but you know something? You're a schmuck for not wearing a mask because you're supposed to protect your fellow Americans around you. So this is how stars are used. What else did I see this week? I saw that the International Criminal Court wants to file arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and the head of the Hamas, Gaza's leader, the three top Hamas officials, Gaza's leader Yahya Sinwar, the political chief Haniya, and al-Masri, the leader of Hamas's armed wing. So who was the panel of experts that advised the ICC? Because that's what they said. A panel of experts, and you saw this in all the papers, a panel of experts in international law convened by the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court have recommended arrest warrants for Netanyahu and somebody else in Israel whose name I don't have in front of me. Well, there are actually only 8 experts on this panel. 6 of them are legal experts, and 2 of them are academic experts. And they seem to all come out of Britain, which is kind of interesting because I would think that the ICC might want to hear from people in different parts of the world. But one of the legal experts, one of the 6, her name is Amal Clooney, and she is an international human rights attorney, and she just happens to be the wife of the actor George Clooney, and they have been married for 10 years. She is Lebanese-British, and she and George Clooney are involved in a lot of different liberal charities and political fundraising for Democratic leaders, etc., etc. And there's a huge uproar right now because it's like, well, what does George Clooney think about his wife saying that the head of state of Israel should be arrested, and how is this going to affect his career, and so forth and so on. And there was a big party a couple of nights ago that George Clooney was supposed to attend with his wife for Joe Biden, and he didn't go. What does it mean that he wasn't there? And I saw something else in the news, which is that the G7 is going to be meeting next month. The G7 is the group of 7, and this is from UK's Independent newspaper. It said G7 officials make progress, but no final deal on money for Ukraine from frozen Russian assets. So they're saying that all of these frozen Russian assets should be released immediately and given to Ukraine. It says U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is pushing for borrowing against the future interest income from the frozen assets, and that would mean that Ukraine could be given as much as $50 billion immediately. That's just borrowing against the interest, right? $50 billion immediately. But again, there is another Hollywood scandal involving George Clooney and Joe Biden, because evidently Switzerland wants to host a peace summit. They're hosting a peace summit immediately following the G7 meeting, and they did it right on the tails, and so that it's very easy for everyone who is at G7 to just jet right over to the peace summit, and this is going to answer some questions about Russia, Ukraine, and what can we do? Can there be, you know, Putin has said, well, if he can hold on to all the land that he's gained, well, he doesn't mind negotiating a ceasefire. Well, Biden's people have said they don't think he's going to be at the peace summit because he's got to jet back really fast to Hollywood to go to a big important fundraiser where, hello, George Clooney will be. So what I'm trying to show you is that you have an illusion that is all-encompassing. This is the system. This is what Alan was trying to tell Jackie was the system. And he said the parietal lobe, the language is not just something that is written or something that is said. Let me see if I can get here to that little bit, he said. I said I would tell you what happened at the end of part 5 when they got cut off and they went into part 6. And Jackie said, we're talking about solutions. We've talked a lot. So Alan said, where do you want to take off? And Jackie said, we were talking about the illusion. And we were talking about what can people do. And you said, anything that's ever been tried has been tried within their system, and it's always been their game, and that it's your belief that trying to do it from within their system is not going to work, and that you said the answers are within us. And that is what Alan said over and over in section 5, in interview 5. He said, it's in everyone's ability. In their head, let me say this first, the technique of control is through language. Language consists of 5 senses, each one the brain can interpret. We dismiss the other ones. We dismiss our own hearing. It's what we see that's the big thing, and that's the biggest illusion of all. Then you have your hearing, and you have your smell, taste, and so on. He said they tried all this in the cinemas back in the 1930s. They had peel-off wrappers that would give fragrances. Now they have virtual reality, which can literally fool the brain. But we're almost within virtual reality with the psychological techniques and the lies since childhood that we are inferior. And we're told that we're inferior because, you see, others' names on the books that you're given at school, and you're taught right away at school, this is a special person, and you can never really be like that. And you flip through it and you think, my God, how did they write on so many subjects? And he said, the biggest part of our brain is called the parietal lobe, and it isn't used. And we're now in that place where everything is visual, and Hollywood and the various other mediums, Hollywood is visual more than anything else. Yes, there's sound in it, but it's a visual medium. And he said, this is the biggest lie of all, the easiest one to trick you. And I have mentioned recently a couple of times the movie Golem. And that is an important one to get a hold of and see if you want to see what has always been known about the power of the moving picture, the power of the visual. And now we have the visual that dominates social media, little bitty things that are sent in threads. So often what you see is just a picture, and then people comment back and forth on that picture. And what Alan was saying is that it's all in your own mind to overcome this. And he told me early on, when you start to break through the illusion, your brain functions differently. And I have discovered that to be the truth. Many people said, well, Alan didn't give solutions. He did. He did. Break through into your own individuality. That is where freedom lies. Jackie kept going back to the money system. He said, all that takes care of itself. I've had a little bit of back and forth on some social media that I had an opportunity to participate in this week, and there were some people there that were very keen on Black's Law and maritime versus all of the different kinds of law that, you know, well, the U.S. isn't, you know, it's a corporation, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you know, no. All of this is put out there for us to trap you forever and to think that you are somehow solving the problem when the answer lies with you and the full use of your own brain, which is achievable. I did not want to distract with the Hollywood stories, nor do I want to impress you with the name dropping. What I want to show you is I was part of the illusion making business, and I fell victim to the illusion making business. I saw that for myself, how it worked, how stars are made, and it gave me something to think about. Oh, I see. And if you can keep telling yourself that what you're looking at, when you're looking at the news and you're looking at these stories, may be all made up, or it may be real. I mean, these things may be really happening, but it's part of the illusion that is created for us. And as Alan stressed so heavily in part 5, the key to the illusion is making you feel small. He never thought that any of us were small. He thought we all mattered, and we do. So I'm hoping that this was helpful for you. Just one more quick thing. On the Telegram CTTM Book Club channel, chat room, I saw that someone had posted something that the Russian ambassador to South Africa wrote a couple of days ago. And it is quite interesting. His name, I believe, is Ilya Rogachev. And the piece that he wrote was The Thin Red Line from Unthinkable to Unavoidable. He said, the wave of statements made by high-ranking European and NATO officials of alleged Russian attack on NATO is ongoing. So, skipping a little bit, he said, some accuse their leaders of fear-mongering. Others take their warnings seriously, like in Sweden, where people flocked to the stores to stock up on fuel and survival kits after Sweden Commander-in-Chief Michael Biden's words that all Swedes need to prepare for a war. But how did we get there? What is happening in Western politics and mass media resembles attempts to shift the Overton window with regard to the idea of the West's yet another war against Russia. We are talking about the much-touted concept in sociology, first introduced by U.S. political scientist Joseph Overton. According to this theory, an idea's political viability depends on whether it falls within the range of acceptance by the general public, the window, with degrees of acceptance referred to as unthinkable, radical, acceptable, sensible, popular, and policy. So you go all the way from this is unthinkable to it's now policy. One of the elements of Overton's concept is the hypothesis that the window can be deliberately shifted or expanded through manipulation of public opinion, like to make some initially unacceptable idea a new normality for the given society. We certainly do not claim scientific accuracy of this article and use the term Overton window for illustrative purposes only. However, scholars do not generally question the possibility of gradually imposing a major change on public opinion through small, often unnoticeable steps, aka creeping normality. The process can also be explained through the boiling frog metaphor. If a frog is put suddenly into boiling water, it will jump out. But if the frog is put in tepid water, which is then brought to a boil slowly, it will not perceive the danger and will be cooked to death. As Ukraine keeps losing the ground, Western elites grow skeptical about its victory on the battlefield, even with the hundreds of billions worth of Western military aid. Yet, given how much Washington and Brussels had politically, financially, and militarily overcommitted themselves to the conflict, apparently they are more than reluctant to let Kyiv lose, in so much as to consider putting their own troops on ground in Ukraine. 2 years ago, everyone knew the collective West was waging a proxy war against Russia. However, the very idea of their direct clash in the 21st century was unbelievable for the general population. For Western warmongers, this was the zero stage of the process to convince people otherwise, the stage unthinkable. The aim of propaganda at the initial stage to convert the unthinkable idea of war against Russia into a radical one by removing the taboo that seemed to be sealing this topic. The efforts to make it public were started in 2022-23 when Western leaders began repeating that boots of European, NATO, American, etc., underlined soldiers will never touch the ground in Ukraine. To us, that's from the Russian perspective, it looks like the first step to get people used to the idea, likely with a strong wish for it to happen behind. General public in the West has had much fear about the looming global conflict with Russia, and their politicians had to react to their concerns. I'll let you finish reading that article for yourself. It is interesting. I like to see things as much as often as I have an opportunity from a perspective way outside the mainstream news that is so easy to access. And then the other day when I was speaking with Johnny, he talked about the idea that the outcome of this, that Zelensky had said he wants to turn Ukraine into a, you know, basically a smart technology paradise. And this is an article from 2 days ago. Ukraine embraces smart grid technology for energy system overhaul with banking sector backing. As Ukraine embarks on a major overhaul of its energy infrastructure. Now just ask yourself the question. They're in this war with Russia. They're getting money from all over the West, and we're, you know, Germany is now going to be teaching Ukrainian in schools to make it easier for their something like more than 20,000 Ukrainian refugees to adapt to life in Germany. So, and other parts of Europe are being flooded with Ukrainians, and somehow Ukraine has the money to embark on a major overhaul of its energy infrastructure. The country's Ministry of Energy has endorsed a comprehensive roadmap for the development of intelligent power networks to integrate automation and digital advancements through the energy sector. The government has announced plans to employ smart technologies to rebuild facilities that suffered destruction in Russian strikes. Moreover, the adoption of microgrid technology is aimed to bolster the system's resilience to military disruption and natural calamities. And this goes on, but you've got big banks, the banking sector, helping Ukraine completely transform its energy infrastructure to develop and implement smart grid technologies. As always, I hope that you have a good week and keep listening. I know I yammered on for a long time tonight, but keep listening to Alan, the source of the most wonderful thought-provoking ideas. He certainly helped me break out of the illusions. And I know, as he said to Jackie, when you speak the truth, that is the weapon that cannot be countered. Have a good week, and I'll see you later. Bye. Or as Arnold Schwarzenegger would say, I'll be back.